Welcome to the best damn podcast ever. My name is Blake Buck, and co-hosting with me this week, we've got Justin Fick.
How's it going, Blake Buck?
Justin Fick, it's going good. Now, I guess, start the show. And I was thinking just now, man, whenever we start the show with an apology, that's when things start heading south.
In other words, every single show.
Yeah, we're only a couple of, you know, it's only two or three episodes now just from Total Armageddon, but... you know, I was moving last week, and then just this week, I've been out of town all week, so the show's been posting a little slow, but we are still recording them, but I've been up for so many hours just to pick. I've been on planes all day. I don't know where I am!
Did you not just get off a plane coming from Las Vegas?
I did. I've been flying for 12 hours, and now it's podcast time. Fantastic. But dude,
You are a trooper, sir.
I just got back from California Extreme, and I don't want to tell you exactly... what happened out there? But let's just say next week. Maybe in fact, by the time you're hearing this, I got some big heat coming to post. Don't worry.
I'm looking forward to this.
Anyway, this is your best damn podcast ever for Wednesday, July 20th, 2011. Just pick what we got in the news this week.
First up, there's a report from a Wedbush industry chart tracker. That's estimating that Battlefield 3 could have a $50 million marketing budget.
Woo!
Now, $50 million.
You know what? Now, is that a lot?
I'd say so.
I mean, $50 million sounds like a lot, but I don't know. How much would you say, you know, your average AAA shooter normally gets in marketing?
I'll be honest, I have no clue, but it's like, I mean, this is like... twice the budget for, you know, a normal AAA game right now.
That's true. Man, you remember when Shenmue came out and it was the most expensive game ever made? It cost $26 million.
Yeah.
That game's production cost half of this game's marketing.
Yeah, that says nothing for this game's development itself. This is just the commercials and the magazine print ads and... I don't know, fucking souvenir swag. Whoa. Shotguns are going to be handing out at E3. I don't know.
Honestly, souvenir shotguns? How did we miss this?
I don't know. What the hell could they be spending $50 million on?
Well, I think it's...
I mean, a fucking Super Bowl ad? I don't know.
Well, you know, Battlefield 3 has to regain ground. You know, they've been trying to eat away at Activision's, you know, just total dominance of the console shooter market with Call of Duty. And I think this could be the year they do it. I don't know. This is totally anecdotal and just in my experience. But it seems like people are maybe getting fatigued with Call of Duty a little bit. Maybe, like, this year could be the year that they sway it over and EA is able to push Battlefield above Call of Duty, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I'm getting a little fatigued with the whole genre.
This whole video game thing.
I'm getting fatigued with video games. I'm just going to open up a fucking Italian restaurant. I'm done.
You would just call it Ficarada and his sauces.
Thick Sauce Incorporated.
So, yeah, I guess $50 million is a lot of money. But at the same time, though, I also, this just has popped up in my head, the movie Mars Needs Moms. Are you familiar with that, Justin Fick?
I am familiar with it. I've seen the commercials.
That movie had a $50 million marketing budget.
Good God.
And I read...
I guess it's not too far-fetched. And, like, we've caught up with cinema.
Right. But what I was going to say about Mars Needs Moms is that movie completely tanked in the box office and only made $30 million. And the movie itself cost $150 million to make, $50 million to market, and it made $36.
Like, wow.
Probably up there in the greatest, like, modern financial failures of any kind of media.
Well, I mean, that also shines a light on why you really don't see a whole lot in, you know, innovation nowadays in these AAA games is why, you know, I can't tell the difference between these games anymore is because there is a very specific thing that they have sort of latched onto and... you know, to deviate from that is scary as shit. Because if they do, you know, if they put $200 million into a game and it makes $36 million, that's, you know, say goodbye to about 1,000 jobs. You know, that's the apocalypse.
But I mean, you can't be the ultimate cynic here, Justin Fick, because at the same time, it is about innovation. And, you know, people don't just want the same release. I mean, we all say, okay, marketing, we want the familiar. People do want the familiar, but we also want the new. even in, you know, Black Ops, you know, which is basically derivative of all the other games, it has to push some levels of newness, and I think it did, even though certainly not as much as it should have, you know, if it was trying to be bold. But I mean, you can't say, oh, well, we just like the same old thing over and over, because that's not.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a balance between the familiar and giving, you know, providing a new experience. I mean, if it's completely this, you know, the same game over again, I mean, that's not going to cut it unless you're a Guitar Hero. But I mean,
well, even then, that dries up eventually.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, they have to add a little something every time.
I was at California Extreme, and there was a Dance Dance Revolution machine. I was thinking, hey, man, first of all, it's a good thing we had our chat last week, and I knew better than to try and get on that.
You didn't try it? You just let it go?
No, yeah, I let it go. Not happening. No, I went over and played that. What is it called? Beat Mania? You know, the one with all the buttons? Dude, that game is shit.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I kind of like it, honestly.
I don't get it. Well, first, it's like, okay, when you're playing Guitar Hero, you hold down the fret and you strum, and it goes, wee, and then if you get it wrong, it doesn't go, wee, right?
Yeah.
But a lot of these rhythm games, even if you press the notes wrong or don't get them right, the music is still the same. That's the same way that Beat Mania is. It's just like a Tap Tap Revolution on the iPhone. It's like, what's the point?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's I don't know. I kind of like it just because it's a rhythm game that I can play now that I'm old and fat. I mean, Beat Mania gets very difficult too.
Oh yeah,
I mean,
no,
it's, you know, it's pretty much just like horizontal line bukkake by the time you get to the hardest levels. It's, you know, I kind of like that in those games.
Not to give anything away about my I'm going to use the word extensive coverage. Not to give anything away about my extensive coverage of California Extreme, but I was real drunk when I was playing Beat Mania. And there is, because it was me and this guy, because I was like, dude, you're my best friend. We're going to play Beat Mania. I have never met this person before I walk up to the Beat Mania machine.
We share a connection.
And no, we hung out for like an hour. It was weird. But I was like, yeah, dude, put it on the hardest difficulty. Let's do it. Oh, my God. It was just insane. And it was on no fail mode. So he's just endlessly smoking me. And like, once you lose.
And you're just like, you know what? The palm of my hand is big enough to mash all seven of these buttons at the same time.
Right. That's. Oh, God. Look, video's coming. Don't worry.
The other thing that Beat Mania reminds me of, you ever played Step Mania for, I mean, Mac or anything?
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's like playing that on the keyboard.
Hmm.
Where they can just give you step charts that, I mean, for the people that don't know what Step Mania is, it's basically a DDR emulator for your computer that you could either plug in like a dance pad to USB or just use the four arrow keys on your keyboard. And you might be thinking, oh, that's, like, completely cheating, but that allows people to make, like, these just unreal fucking step charts for it.
Mm.
Just wicked, wicked hard. And it's actually really fun.
You know, I guess, do they have that, do you think they make a Beat Mania in the same vein as Step Mania? Do you think there's, like, a, because you could certainly map the buttons of Beat Mania to a keyboard, and the experience would largely be the same.
Yeah, because, I mean, the keys and the keyboard are kind of the same configuration,
sort of
like that.
The turntable is just like a button, like you just like shove it, and that's all you.
Yeah, either that or your mouse.
Right.
You know, just move your mouse like up and down, or something.
Somebody get on that.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be interested
somebody
to see if there's
that.
One
get
of those
on
out
it.
There.
More of that homework we've been talking about.
All right, do our work for us.
So we got to get back to $50 million. Is that too much? Is that just right? What do you think, Joseph Fick?
I think for these games, they've become so huge that I think they have, and it's just as much of a marketing thing than it is a development thing now. Like that, like they really, I mean, because the games are pretty much fucking identical. As I mean, even if they're not, they're identical as far as I'm concerned. You know, because if I'm in the mood for one of these war games, and you know, I mean, as someone who's sort of been out of that loop since Call of Duty 4,
mm-hmm.
you know, so I mean, I've been out of the loop for a while. Like, I'm just going to flip a fucking coin right now. So for me, it's going to come down to which one of them can convince me that they're the better game? I mean, that's marketing, that's advertising, that's all that, you know.
Right.
It's going to come down to commercials and shit for someone like me.
Honestly, now, this is going to get, I don't want to, we're only, what, 10 minutes into this, and now I'm already getting into the esoteric territory. But, you know, okay, have you ever, this sort of gets into, like, people have said that you know, in our generation, that marketing is sort of the art of our generation. And if you look at any art, you know, there's sort of the half of it is the content and the quality of it, and the other half is the story and sort of the marketing that goes with it. Like, my favorite example, have you ever heard of Lobster Telephone, Justin Fick?
Lobster Telephone? No, I have not.
Let me just see. Just Google Lobster Telephone.
Yeah, I'm actually Googling Lobster Telephone as we speak.
Yeah, there you go. You'll see it. Google image results for Lobster Telephone. This is a Salvadali ensemblage is the name of it.
And, okay.
It's very famous. It's in, yep. I don't know where it is now. Let's just say it's in a fancy art museum. Do you see the picture, Justin Fick?
Yes, I do.
What would you describe what Lobster Telephone is?
It is a lobster on top of a telephone.
And that's it. Salvador Dali.
I like it.
One of our perhaps most prolific minds in art. Lobster Telephone, right? And people will look at this and say, and I've clearly said, oh, this is great because whatever, it's got all these meanings and whatever. But at the end of the day, if you look at it, it's a lobster on a telephone. Now, my point is this. Like, the reason that Salvador Dali, if I were to put a lobster on a telephone, people would say, get the fuck out. Why are you drinking in the art museum? But Salvador Dali does it, and that sort of is the marketing, right? Salvador Dali has this image, this brand, and when he does something like this, even though maybe the content isn't great or is great, but people see it in a different light because of that sort of marketing.
Yeah, it's like my first reaction to seeing, you know, a lobster on a telephone by Salvador Dali, I mean, well, the first one was, what the fuck am I looking at? The second one was, that looks kind of cool and I want one.
No, right, because on another level, I do like it in the sense that perhaps it's poking fun at art. And, like, it's trying to break art down to the barest form of, like, let's just take two things and put them together, and that is art. Mm-hmm. I mean, but is he saying all those high-level things, or is it just he was doing a lot of...
Or did he just get stoned one day, and that's what popped into his mind?
Right. So, I know this is getting kind of off-topic from Modern Warfare, but in the same sense, you know, how much does the marketing of Modern Warfare outweigh its design? In the same sense, how much does the marketing of Lobster Telephone outweigh its design?
Well, the thing is, I don't know if it outweighs it, but I mean, and this applies to indie games too. Marketing is incredibly important. I mean, and I think that's the reason why a lot of indie developers fail, is because they look at marketing as some sort of evil thing. But I mean, and I think they mix that up with advertising. I mean, marketing is just finding the people that would want to be into your game and into you, and, you know, just letting them know that you're out there. And this is not like banner ads and shit. I mean, this is, you know, Salvador Dali making weird fucking shit, and the people who, you know, just showing a couple people, and then, you know, it's like the people that would be into that telling their friends about it, you know, word of mouth, that kind of thing. I mean, it's... And sort of finding the people who be into that, and then showing, you know, letting them know that you exist.
Right, just like Salvador Dali, right? He went out and when he made Lobster Telephone, he showed all of his high art, esoteric, surrealist art friends this piece, and they were into it. Right, he didn't just make it and put it in a basement and say, "Done, Lobster Telephone, I'm a millionaire."
Yeah, and I think a lot of indie developers do that. Like they make their game in this vacuum. And, you know, I mean, that's kind of what happened with my first couple games. Like, I just created it in a bedroom and, you know, like, I maybe told a couple of people on the iDev game site about it. And, you know, it gets released and it gets, you know, a couple thousand downloads, which is nice. But, you know, it's not going to take off like that unless I find the people who are going to be into that game and tell them that this game exists. You know, because, I mean, there are games out there, Blake Buck, that we're going to fucking love.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm positive there are games out there that if we played them, we would fucking love them, and they do not know how to get in touch with us.
Right. You know, it happens ever so often that somebody will just send me, I'll read an article or somebody will send me a link to an iPhone game, and I think, what the fuck? Why have I not played this? This is amazing. Mm-hmm. And that's a failure of marketing.
Yeah. So, and you know, the thing is, like, a lot of these, you know, a lot of, you know, game programmers are, you know, like, they're very introverted. They're very kind of like, you know, they're kind of nerdy. And marketing is a very extroverted, you know, it's tooting your own horn. It's, you know, it's a very social thing. Mm. You know, so it's something that people look at as, you know, like, oh, I'm just shoving ads in people's faces. But, you know, no, that's actually not it at all.
Right. And yeah, again, this is getting a little weird, but like, if you even think about ads, okay, think about 50 years ago. What were ads? You're at, it's 19, well, 50 years ago, be 61. We make a cleaning product called Mr. Sparkle. We're going to put a commercial on TV. Mr. Sparkle cleans the toppest tees and the lowest beat. Like, this stupid shit where, you know, there it's like, it'll clean your floor like a sunshiny day. And it's, they just kind of list the features of the products, right?
Mm-hmm.
Imagine like Comet in the 50s when they advertise Comet. They're just listing off the features. And it seems like ads now aren't, those ads don't work. And it seems like companies and people and we're collectively realizing they don't work. And true marketing is not doing that shit. I mean, I guess having ads like that still is important, but it is the social networking kind of thing now, right?
And it's a little bit of that, and it's about knowing how to talk to the people that would want to, you know, in my you know, example, play my game. You know, like, you have to know how to talk to these people.
Hmm.
You know, and you're not going to do it, you know, in my instance anyway, by pretending like I'm some big, you know, important person, and, you know, like, I'm this prestigious developer or something. No, I'm just one fucking dude making some cool shit. Come play my game. And you know, and you can, like for instance, you can, I don't know, punch people's testicles up through their head and send them into outer space. Like, I don't know, it's like things that, you know, would make them laugh and make them interested in playing the game. And, you know, the thing, like, honestly, like, to play my games, you have to be a little fucked in the head at least. So you kind of have to speak to that.
Right.
You know, like all of my games are a little mentally disturbed. So, you know, I'm not going to go pretending like I'm some, you know, fucking fancy pants game studio or something. No, I'm Justin Fick, and that's it. Like, I'm nothing more important than that. I'm just one dude making some sick games.
Nice.
So, I mean, it's you have to be sincere about it, and you kind of have to speak the language of the people that, you know, speak the language of your players, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, maybe I'm just talking out of my ass, but well, I mean, no, I think like those are the things that if I see them, like if I see an ad that says, you know, like for instance, there's an ad on the Battlefield page for Battlefield 3, you know, and it's like, okay, I see a picture of a soldier and some tanks, and okay, it's, you know, that, yeah, it looks cool, but I'm like, okay, it's
right. It doesn't work as nearly as well for me as like a picture of a mountain, and then it just says in giant red text across it, "Rape Mountain, the game."
Yeah.
I have to see what that is.
So you see that, and it's like, what the fuck is that? or like, you know, for instance, if you know, I hate to go back to the, you know, to a word I already used this podcast, but you know, just seeing an ad for a game called Super Bukkake Ball. You know, tell me, wouldn't be like, what the fuck is that?
Okay,
and
okay.
Click on it.
That's Justin Vick, your new game, Super Bukkake Ball, Terror on Rape Mountain.
Done.
Success guaranteed. Why aren't people asking us for marketing ideas? We're full of them.
Dude, no, dude, I'm writing this down on my ass book, Super Bukkake Ball, Terror on Rape Mountain.
I don't think XBLA is going to approve that one. I don't think. All right, so we've spun off way into 20 minutes on our first news story. Good lord!
And it wasn't even that interesting a news story.
How did this happen? All right,
closing that shit.
All right, next up we got LA. Now we talked about this a little last week, so I'll keep this brief. But LA Noire Development Studio will learn from its mistakes, says I don't want to say president. I think he's like their chief operator or lead designer. Oh, what's his name? Dave Hieronymus. Hieronymus. Is that his name? He's this bald dude who is a fucking loser. Every time I talk about this guy, I just hate him. But, you know.
Well, I mean, like, I don't know. It's
The IGDA had this. We talked about this last week. How they're investigating how they had these absurd hours they had to work, and then there's been some controversy over some of the developers didn't get credited when they were supposed to. Now it's come out that some people. Wait, let me read the exact quote here. Hieronymus, he said that he did concede that I can't say that no one here ever worked 100 hours per week.
Jeez.
100 hours a week.
Fuck, dude.
It seems like you should be able to say that. I can't say anyone here didn't murder children.
I can't say it didn't happen.
I can't say we didn't unleash terror on Rape Mountain, but we might have.
So, I can't say our team didn't play Superbook hockey ball with each other in the break room to relieve stress from their 100-hour work weeks.
Man, 100 hours, though. How do you even do that? Okay, take your average day. Now double that. Okay, now have it and add that again.
Like, well, no, I mean, take your average day and double it 5 days a week, and you have 80.
Right, yeah. Then take your average
day. And then
day.
20 hours during the weekend.
Good Lord, man.
That's just fucking nuts.
You know what? I almost want to go back. Now, I'm not officially doing this, but I almost want to go back and reverse my judgment on this game. Because ever since this, I was really into it when it came out. Ever since then, like, I don't know, it's gotten on my nerves. There's all this bad press about it now. And I don't know. I think I'm going to play through. I'm going to finish it this week. And I might have to do an unprecedented reversal on a judgment.
For what it's worth, I like the game for what it is.
I don't know. It's super repetitive in the middle, which I did not realize. That's why we got the new tape section, Justin Fick. We no longer have to make premature judgments.
Yeah, exactly.
And by that, I mean, because we never finish games. We just won't have judgments anymore.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, that's why I didn't have a judgment for like 40 episodes in a row, because I only had time to play the first 10 minutes of everything.
Well, there's so many games out. Dude, I'm saving my tapes. Don't worry. Your tapes. What's your next news, Justin Fick?
All right, so my next news is about Sony, and Sony committing $20 million to indie developers.
Woo, that's a lot.
Now, this is kind of cool.
Almost half the amount of marketing that they're spending on Battlefield.
To put it in perspective, Sony's huge program to bolster up indie development for their entire lineup of platforms is less than half of the marketing for Battlefield 3. Just to put that into perspective. So, the thing is, like, I've always kind of liked the way Sony connects with indie developers. I mean, if you look at PSN, they always have those cool, like, those cool, really artsy indie games, like Everyday Shooter, like all the stuff from that game company, you know, Flow, Flower, Journey's coming out soon.
Yeah, now how do they determine who? Because once you kind of get in their little club, you know, the Sony indie club, you know, they seem to finance projects and they do pretty well, but I wonder how one gets into that sort of scene.
Yeah,
how do you?
Because I mean, honestly, I would love to be on PSN. I mean, like a long time ago, I would have wanted to be on XBLA. It seemed like that was the place to be, but that's just, I don't know. XBLA is becoming a little bit of a mess nowadays.
Yeah, and it's super crowded on XBLA too, because they're doing about at least two, sometimes three games a week.
Mm-hmm.
And so certainly, I mean, just regardless. You're taking the amount, because we talk about this all the time, right? You can't launch two games at the same time. Alan Wake and Red Dead Redemption came out on the same day. People only got money for one of them, so only one of those is going to sell. The same way.
I mean, it's a little different for downloadable games. Like, I mean, you know, $10 versus $60.
Sure, but at the same time, you know, I've only got so. I mean, think about me. I'm like, I buy more fucking games than anybody. But, for instance, what's the I love XBLA games, but what is that new Planeswalker, the new Magic the Gathering game?
The new Magic?
I would love to play that, but I hadn't because I was playing the other one that came out that week, and it's just kind of fallen by the wayside, and I've kind of forgotten about it.
I didn't figure you for a Magic player, Blake Buck.
You know, when that first one came out, I didn't play it. I was like, what is this? I'm not a nerd, but then I remembered, you know, back in the day, 7th grade, that was when you were throwing down some Magic. I think everybody's had a.
The thing is, I never played Magic as a kid.
Really? Not. I mean, it seems like everybody had a phase.
I had seen it played in high school, and I was like, nerds, fuck that shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, it kind of dropped off my radar. And maybe like less than a year ago, some of the guys at Freeverse brought in a couple decks. And they're like, hey, Fick, you know, you've played Magic before. And I'm like, no, not really. And they're like, you want to learn? And I'm like, no. But, I mean, I watched a couple of games just out of curiosity, and it's a really fascinating game.
No, yeah,
and then I got into it fucking hardcore. And now I have, like, hundreds of dollars worth of fucking cards in my closet. I'm into it bad. But it's a really cool game to like, study if you're a game designer.
Sure, because it's the perfect – because I think the key thing I like about Magic – this is getting real fucking... Oh, my favorite part of Magic the Gathering, made by Wizards of the Coast, is that the game is inherently random. You get the deck, and you can customize the deck, and there's, you know, I mean, certain ways you play, but inherently you don't know what you're going to draw, you don't know what the other person's going to draw, and that there's a huge random factor that I think that has kind of disappeared from gaming. I mean, I went to California Extreme. All those games operate on random number generators, by and large.
Yep.
And that's part of what makes them fun. It's like, oh, I'm playing Donkey Kong, and what the fuck, this random barrel came and killed me, and I hate that, but it's a different experience every time I play, and you never really know what to expect.
Yeah, I mean, I have always been a huge fan of random numbers in games. I mean, it's what separates, you know, a game just becoming this rote, you know, recital of moves. Like, you get
right.
to the, you know,
because
you get to the ledge, and you press X to shimmy on it.
Right, yeah,
you
know, and not to hate on Battlefield 3, but, I mean, that's sort of what the direction the whole shooter genre has gone. Certainly even games like L.A. Noir, shit, that game has no random elements. What, maybe the AI when they're shooting at you? Maybe?
Yeah, I mean, L.A. Noir, I wouldn't expect it, because that's sort of like playing... It's like playing Monkey Island in, you know,
sure.
a sandbox form.
Right.
But a game like Battlefield 3, where it's chaotic warfare... And I mean,
but even then, there's so many scripted events. I mean, it's not a procedural
well,
world.
Yeah,
it is all laid out in Hollywood
yeah,
blockbuster
it's
style.
It's scripted events, but, and I mean, I can't speak for the latest couple of games, but, you know, if you go back to, like, Call of Duty 4 or 3, 2, you know, you get to a checkpoint, and, you know, like, Halo does this really, you know, really bad, too.
Mm.
It's, you know, so, like you get to a checkpoint, and, you know, say you play it through, like, 10 times, you die every time. But here's the thing. In every one of those playthroughs, there's, you know, the guy that's going to pop up behind the crate, shoot him first. Then there's going to be two guys that come across behind the pillar, then you shoot both of them. And it happens every single time. And it's just reciting that sequence of events perfectly.
Right.
And, you know, it sort of becomes mind-numbing after a while. And then what random numbers do, if you go back to these old games in, like, the late 70s, the early 80s,
oh,
you would have found
dude,
in an arcade,
oh.
They force you to improvise.
Right.
And they force you to think quickly, and that is what makes the game really, really cool. And that's why I try to put random, you know, like some sort of random element into everything that I do, because it keeps you on your toes.
Not to spoil this video I got upcoming, but I was talking to this guy. His name is Mark Alpiger, who I think I'll have in the video here soon. But he used to be the world leader on Crystal Castles. I think he's number two.
Okay.
He's number two now, but I watched him play about five or six rounds, and like... There are so many random elements that, like, that's... I mean, okay, I understand, like, oh, fucking playing Crystal Castles over and over and over and over again to modern gamers would seem stupid, right? It's like, where's the cutscene? Where's the... You know, but that randomness is what drives... That's the thrill. It's the fact that there is no finite high score to that game, just inherently how it's laid out. I guess all games at some point do have an ultimate high score, but... Yeah, that's what makes these...
Not really. Not necessarily.
That's what makes these old games great, though, is that they're always changing, and that's why they're fun to replay. I mean...
Yeah, if you look at Pac-Man, for instance, Pac-Man has a perfect score.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it's... There is a score that you cannot possibly exceed. That's if you hit every dot on every level, and hit every ghost, and hit every fruit... You know, there is a theoretical perfect score.
Well, even
that has been hit a couple times,
right? By my hero, you know. Billy Mitchell, nonetheless.
Hero.
Yeah. What I'm getting at, Justin, is there's so many of these good old games, and they're all great because of the randomness.
Yeah, and I think we've kind of lost a lot of that abstract. That abstract kind of game in favor of, you know, 3D worlds, in favor of realistic graphics, and, you know, in favor of presentation, I guess, is the word. you know, in production value. I mean, you know, if you look at engines, people really aren't thinking in terms of game spaces anymore. You know, they're thinking in terms of this realistic place that you can put these realistic looking characters and have the physics be realistic. And there really isn't, you know, this cool game system anymore. Now it's, I mean by game system, I mean this, you know, this combination of mechanics. It's really just, you know, how you move stuff around in this pre-existing engine, and there's only so much you can do with that.
Yeah. And again, like, yeah, just like, exactly, because, like, if you look at a game like Donkey Kong or one of these old games, there are sort of mechanics that come out of that the designers never designed. They just sort of come out naturally of the random elements. I mean, I could talk for hours about this, and we should probably move on, but I guess the point I'm getting at is, like, it seems like now games are designed as a very linear experience with no opportunity for chance. And whereas, like, back in the day, certainly, I mean, it's still today some, but it seemed like games were a product of their random elements.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Yeah, totally agree. I mean, like, games now are, you know, like, they have this experience with a beginning, a middle, and an end that you are meant to experience all of at some point. You know, like, for instance, you buy God of War, you know, God of War 3, for instance. They have sold that game to you with the intention that you will get through the whole thing, that everyone who plays that game will eventually get through the whole thing unless they just stop for some reason.
Right.
You know, no one will be stopped by they're not good enough.
Dude, that needs to be the marketing on your new game. Like, you must be man enough to ride this ride.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's kind of the, you know, I mean, personally, that's my credo is my games are sort of a challenge from me to my players. So it's here's this thing, you know, this game, and I'm, you know, when you play it, I'm going to push against you. And the idea is for you to push back at me. You know, it's and it's sort of like, I don't know, it's kind of respecting them like that, like, you know, it's kind of like a show me what you got kind of thing, instead of here is this set of, you know, this story that I want to tell you, and you're going to get the whole thing, you know, no matter how badly you suck, you just got to throw yourself at it enough times. No, it's like you're going for some, you know, it's a measure of skill. Right. You know, I'm gonna push at you, and then you're gonna push back, and if you push me back, I'm gonna push harder, and I'm gonna, you know, make sure that I make a game that can eventually push you over.
Or if you're Blake Buck, you just play Justin Fix games and lose real bad immediately.
But yeah, I think that's something that we've kind of gone away from. I mean, I love games that do that to me. Like, I love games that, you know, push me in such a way that I'm not like, well, fuck, this game is bullshit, I'm out. It's more like, okay, well, here's how I can beat this game next time. And I do that, and then the game pushes back even harder, and it's this constant desire to better myself at this thing.
All right, so we keep flying off into tangents.
We got like crazy tangents this time.
Next news we got, Apple and Google could impact game console war, says THQ CEO Brian Farrell, I don't know. But he says, we believe that Apple is going to be there, Google is going to be there. Our view is that the next generation of consoles, if there are consoles, are going to be less about technology and more about service orientation of the gamer. I mean, we've said this on a few shows before, but I think this is absolutely correct. I think that...
Not only that, but I think he's a little too late. Like, they already have influenced the next gen, you know, like...
Sure, but I mean, not
even the next generation, this generation. I mean, look at the Wii U. It's an iPad. Look at the PS, you know, the PS Vita. It's got, you know, touchscreen controls, and it's got, you know, it's got accelerometers and shit.
Well, what I think he's getting at is that, like, rather than the hardware that defines it, it's more about, like, the networks or platforms you're playing on. Like, it's more of, like, we sort of reached the... I don't want to say we've reached the end of the hardware spectrum, but certainly the hardware innovation has slowed down in the gaming industry, and now software is sort of defining how, especially like online networking software like Apple's Game Center or Xbox Live or PSN, those are more, or Steam or OnLive, those are all defining more what the new innovation of video games are.
Yeah, cause, I mean, if you look at graphics now, like they've kind of, in terms of getting things as photorealistic as possible, we're kind of there.
Well, you know, no,
I mean, not quite, but. Well, you know,
there's always room for innovation. It will always be being, but I think that innovation has slowed dramatically compared to the other areas of software.
It'd be foolish of me to say we've maxed out, but we've plateaued. You know, like we got HD now, we got our next gen goo, we got our fucking facial recognition Jones everywhere, and you know, it's like where else can we do our R&D?
One word.
And it's
one word: holograms. They're coming. They are coming. Holograms.
I'm still waiting for my teledictronics. Kinect is almost there. Just has to start recognizing my schlong.
All right, so I got one more story for us here. We talked about this last week, but EA has officially purchased PopCap. This was announced, I guess, a couple days ago. The deal was worth between $750 million and $1.3
billion.
That is a lot of money.
Yeah, like we've
if EA's spending $50 million on Battlefield's advertising this fall, they spent, over 70 times that to acquire PopCap.
That's a lot of money.
But they have super strong IP. I mean, yeah. Plants vs. Zombies is big, Bejeweled is big, and also even their smaller hits like Chuzzle and, you know, Wordworm. Mm-hmm. Those are the evergreen titles that are going to make you money till the end of time, or at least.
Yeah. I mean, like Bejeweled is, you know, Bejeweled has the longevity of Tetris. Mm. You know, I mean, it created the whole fucking match three genre. Mm. I mean, I don't know if it was the first game to do that, but it was the first game to make everyone else do that.
Yeah, and I remember because, you know, Bejeweled started as a Flash game on, like, I think it was like Microsoft had a game web portal. Like, what we're talking 1990. This is way before Xbox. This was like 1998 or something like that. I remember that was the first place I ever heard of Bejeweled on, was this like Microsoft web portal. And now look what it is today. Just multi-million dollar game.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, and it's like Bejeweled is on every fucking system known to mankind. It's on, you know, it's on like freaking television sets, on airplanes now. It's everywhere. And, you know, Peggle is another really universal game. And, you know, like Plants vs. Zombies, like people are buying the shit out of that. And the thing is, like, they're loving the shit out of it, too. It's not like Farmville where everyone plays it and everyone who plays games hates fucking Farmville.
Yeah.
It's like, no, it's like everyone play, you know, people play Plants vs. Zombies and people fucking love Plants vs. Zombies.
Yeah, and
Zombies.
You know that
it's
there's
going to
be Plants vs. Zombies too, and you know that it will make, okay, maybe not $750 million, but a pretty decent chunk of change.
Yeah, I think what they're paying for is just that pedigree, just that, you know, it's, I don't know, like PopCap is kind of batting 1,000. You know, like it's like
certainly lately.
Like you said, even their lesser known games like Chuzzle or Bookworm or something, you know, they're really good games and they sell really well.
So it says over the last 5 years, let's say, well, just to summarize this, basically the value of the purchase will go up depending on how much money PopCap makes over the next couple of years.
So, yeah, I mean that's normal for buyouts.
And of course, we've got our old buddy, Michael. I always want to say Michael Patcher, because I'm dyslexic. His name is actually Michael Pachter, P-A-C-H-T-E-R. We've been saying Michael Patcher for years, but I think it's Michael Pachter.
We're just going to start calling him Michael Tracker now, because he's Chart Tracker Jones.
Of course, he weighs in with his, like, non-interesting quote. Like, my name is Michael Pachter, and I state the obvious. Here we go. In our view, PopCap is a great strategic fit, and we acknowledge that there is limited acquisition opportunities for EA to have the potential add to blah, blah, blah. He is a press release. Michael, you just speak in press release. Anyway, so as of trading time, EA stock was down 1% at closing time, but I'm sure they're going to make... I'm sure this is probably going to be fruitful for both companies. Maybe not. I don't know. It could flub up PopCap's, you know, coolness. You don't want to lose your cool... Because EA is definitely selling out, for sure. They're the first, if not... I guess Activision is bigger, but they're the second largest...
Yeah, I mean, EA's kind of redeemed themselves. I mean, they have a lot of cool IP. Like, you know, for instance, Mirror's Edge, Dead Space, all those kinds of games are... Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they're not crazy out there, but they're kind of out there. I mean, Mirror's Edge is.
Yeah, and they do... The thing is, they're doing a lot of things lately. I mean, they're funding indie games. They're doing smaller titles. Yep. They're doing a lot of stuff, whereas Activision is not. So we've said this on multiple
times. EA is not the EA that we grew to hate a couple of years ago.
EA of today is not the 2004, just awful... Awful.
Yeah, like they've kind of cleaned up. They're treating the girlfriend nice. They're off meth. they got a nice respectable job. So I mean they've turned around.
I mean they're wearing a nice suit. Still have the wife beater on underneath it. But
yeah, beer stains under the armpits.
I was like, how did the wife beater get named? That man beats his wife a lot. Let's call that shirt a wife beater.
Well, because you're not beating them with the tank top. Unless you're doing like one of those like Full Metal Jacket things where you just like put soap in it and just like beat the shit out of someone.
Oh boy, Justin Pink, give us your last news, quick.
But there's so many holes in that tank top. The soap bar of soap would just fall. I don't know. All right, my last news is an ex-Microsoft executive has joined GameStop. So this is Shane Kim, who left Microsoft a few years ago in 2009. Okay. Has joined GameStop to help support the advancement of their digital strategy.
Oh my God, what is... They're like, we want to say nothing. Okay, enhance our digital strategy. Done.
Well, I mean, to me, that's like, what the fuck are we going to do about like On Live and Steam and, you know... Like, I think GameStop kind of knows that stores are probably going to go away.
GameStop is dead. They can't, and like maybe they're trying to like salvage their brand and like sell their brand to somebody else who's doing it. You can't. GameStop, everyone hates you. No one likes GameStop. I mean,
here's the thing: like I've been going around to like, you know, game stores more often now, and like I've been to Targets, I've been to Best Buys, and I've been to the GameStops in the mall. And right now, like, you know, GameStop is the best place to get games.
Really.
Yeah, I mean, Target's always been it's always been okay. Best Buy is a fucking wasteland now. I don't know if it's just my store, but I go into Best Buy now and I go into the game section. It's just like tumbleweeds, and it's no, this is like the Mac section of CompUSA back in the day. Like no one gives a shit about this section anymore. Well, like it's all fallen to pieces, and it's just fucking licensed garbage.
Well, yeah, but I think that also GameStop has generated a lot of ill will with, you know, their used games and
yeah,
their circle of life that we always hate on. I mean, I don't know anybody who's like, yeah, GameStop, that's my go-to. They're my favorite company.
Yeah, well, I mean, and the thing is, that said, like you go into, you know, you go into Best Buy and you ask people about games and they don't fucking know what you're talking about. Like you know, you're walking through the game section and someone's like, you know, can I help you? And you're like, you know, let me get a copy of bloody blah. And they're like, I don't know what the fuck that is. I mean, well, they don't say that, but they're like, okay. And you know, they obviously don't know the games they're selling. And, you know, Target, like, I get the same thing. Like, they're just there to take the thing out of the case.
Yeah, but they're a little different animal. I mean, they're a large, you know, a big box retailers that sell lots and lots of things. So they can afford to have a poor customer experience than GameStop. Because, you know, they're hiring, you know, Steve down the street. Well, I guess so is GameStop.
Yeah, pretty much.
But at least GameStop, it seems like they try and...
In GameStop, at least because it's primarily a game store, there are gamers working there.
Right.
I mean, that's what I found anyway. I go into the GameStop in the mall, and there's the same guy. You know, I mean, not the same guy, but like there's one store that has a dude that works there that I'm like, I know the guy now. I go in there and we fucking talk games, and he knows what he's talking about. And you know, this is purely a single anecdotal case.
No, and I've had GameStops, you know, where like I knew the guys, and we hung out. And I'm sure that, I mean, you know, any of you guys listening have had positive experiences GameStop, but just on the corporate level. You know, I mean, I guess
I agree.
They're dinosaurs.
It's the McDonald's of the game industry.
Right.
It really is.
Anyway, so anything else to add on this, or do you want to move on to releases, Justin Fick?
No, that's about it. I was reading the rest of it, and actually, I haven't. You know, there's actually a quote from GameStop here saying retail is not going to last forever. So that kind of confirms what we're talking about. Like these, you know, like these game stores are not where gamers are getting their games anymore.
Well, I think they're a little too late to the party. There's already a lot of people emerging in this digital market, and I mean, sure, I mean it could, but you got to get on it now if you're gonna make it happen.
Yeah, like they need to really whale on it. I mean, there's a lot of people that are already eating the cake.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, that's it.
All right, let's check out releases. Just a pick. This week we got Captain America Super Soldier on the Xbox, PS3, Wii, and DS. Captain America Super Soldier is a third-person action adventure set during World War II. Now, let me see if I can find the Next Level Games. Oh, God. All right, guys, what are we going to call our game company? I don't know. Let's call it Games. All right, Next Level Games. Done. This looks, I don't know, I'm looking at a screenshot.
It looks like every other superhero movie-based third-person action game.
Yeah, not gonna win any awards, but I guess if you're into this.
By the way, speaking of do not want, you know how last week, speaking of movie-based games, we were talking about Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2, mm-hmm. and how I said that based on the content of the movie, like, this could actually be a really good game if they mm-hmm. do it right?
Right.
They reviewed it. It got 4.0.
Which is zero.
Yeah, which is, this game is shit.
You know, really, why don't we just all as an industry get together and just give things just one of four numbers? That's all we've got. 10, or not even 10, 9, 8, 7, 0.
Pretty much. These huge scales, just like, do we really need them? It's just like, here, this game is fucking awesome, unforgettable. It's pretty good. It's and it's shit.
Well, all right. Well, don't check that one out. I had to guess, I'm going to go out on a limb here. Captain America Super Soldier is probably shit. Call of Juarez The Cartel on PS3 and Xbox 360. Call of Juarez Cartel is the third installment of the Western action shooter Call of Juarez franchise. Now, this is done by Techland, which, did they do the original? Because I thought...
I'm not sure.
I don't believe they did.
They don't sound that familiar.
No, I don't remember Techland, but this looks like a... Well, I'm looking at the screenshot. It almost looks like modern. They've got modern weapons and modern settings.
Huh.
Yeah. What, is everybody Modern Warfare now? Is that...
Call of War as Modern Warfare.
Right, yeah, let's have, like, I don't know, Viking Modern Warfare.
Super Bukkake Ball Modern Warfare.
Terror on Dungeon Mountain. It's changing. Oh, man. All right. Damn it. I keep wanting to tell you these things, but they're like videos I'm working on. I'm sorry, Craig Reed. But I want to shoot this. Have you heard about that book called Room? You know, it's about the...
No, actually.
Okay, I'll tell you later. I'm hiding that power. I'll tell you later.
All right.
Okay. All right, Jessica, what else we got?
All right. The rest of this stuff is crap, I think. So we got... let's see. Fallout New Vegas DLC, Old World Blues, coming out.
Now, did you pick that up last week, Justin Fick?
I did not.
Dude, I missed it too. Damn it! We're not even capitalizing on our own
jokes. I also meant to go get fucking Earth Defense Force. I didn't do that either.
Ah, damn. You know,
No, I almost did. I went to Target. They didn't have it. Then I went to Best Buy. They didn't have it. So I'm like, fuck you guys.
Now, I did read one really negative review of the new Earth Defense Force. So I'm
Philistines is what he is.
I'm a little leery now.
The thing is, the first one was so good. Like, I have to try it.
I know. Well, this review I read was written by somebody who really liked the first one, and they gave this one a really bad score.
I don't know. I gotta go for it anyway.
All right. What? Let's see. Anything else on the releases this week, Justin?
Let's see.
Smurfs.
Oops. A lot of Smurfs. Bastion is coming out. This is kicking off. Ooh. This is on July 20th. This is kicking off the summer of arcade.
Now I heard this game, they narrate what you're doing as you're. It's like an RPG, but there's a like a vocal narrator who is talking.
Yeah, and that yeah he like yeah the narration changes based on what you do.
Now that seems.
It sounds like a cool concept.
Right, that sounds cool, but it seems like okay. I've played this for 10 minutes. Kind of tired of listening to this dude talk now.
Yeah, I mean, I watched a very brief video before we started recording.
We almost did research, and let us tell you what we think.
We almost did research on this. The atmosphere looks really cool. It's got a very Diablo 2-esque soundtrack. It's got a little bit more cartoony graphic style, and then I listened to a little bit of the narration. It seemed cool, but it's one of those things where it's like, after 10 minutes, am I going to want this guy to shut the fuck up? Mm. You know, it's one of those things, just shut up and let me kill this thing. You don't need to tell me the life story of every little fucking goblin that I kill. But I'm gonna grab a demo of it. I kind of want to see what it's all about.
It might end up on tapes next week. And speaking of which, do we got anything else, or is it time for tapes, Justin Fick?
Let's go on to tapes, because the rest of this stuff is garbage.
All right. Let's see, Justin Fick, I've only really got one tape for you this week, so okay. why don't you do two? I'll do one, and we'll save them. I know I have some others. I've just forgotten them. So, what's your first tape?
All right. Well, I got a couple of really quick ones, and then one that's a little more involved. So. I've been going back over X-Blah and going over all the releases that I missed and getting a bunch of demos.
Mm-hmm.
So I went and got the demo for Bang.io, okay. Missile Fury, Fiesta, Debacle 5000.
Nice.
So I played the demo of that, and having never played a Bang.io game before.
Uh-oh.
So, I mean, I've never played Bang.io before, and I start up a demo, and... It gives you a little robot dude, and then like in 2 seconds I'm dead, and I have no idea what the fuck happened. I'm like, oh,
now just okay. Let me chime in because I have played this Bang.io game, and let me tell you,
okay,
the first Bang.io was kind of fairly straightforward. There's been 3 Bang.io games so far.
Okay,
the first one fairly straightforward. The second one was like kind of on the DS. It was more kind of like puzzle oriented, kind of blue. This new one is like the first one, but like times 10 on the difficulty scale. So, if you've not played the first one, and because the tutorial is super sparse, you're just boned.
I don't remember seeing a tutorial. It's like shoot everything, and which the thing is, I have no problem with that because that was the story mode of one of my games back in the day. It's just like shoot this and use this move against this and use this move against this and use this move against this. I'm like, okay,
right, yeah.
And then and then the game starts and I'm dead. I'm like, whoa.
It's really really nuanced. It doesn't seem like it seems like you're just shooting. There's a lot of mechanics, particularly this new one, because they've added in dashing and freeze, which were not in the original game. And like, mm-hmm. if you look at it, there's like, man, this is a super complicated game to play, and then there's almost no tutorial at all.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the thing is, it was one of those games that sort of, like, pushed me, and I'm like, well, fuck you, like, I'm gonna push you back. And after, like, it took me, like, 5 or 6, tries to really get out, because, like, basically, the first level starts with you, like, in the middle of this little play field, and there are literally missiles all around you. And right. they close it on you, and if you don't get out of that within like 2 seconds, you're just dead.
Right.
Well, so it took me a couple tries to figure out exactly what the fuck was going on, and like once that worked, and once I figured out you can dash through stuff and you're invincible, and you can do the freeze attack and shoot missiles that are literally the size of your screen that still somehow turn on a dime.
Right. Well, the main thing about that game is it's like. Is your super moves, right? So I don't know if you really got all this from playing a little bit, but like the more missiles that are close to you when you activate your super attack, the mm-hmm. better your super attack is. So if you just press it and there's no missiles around, you shoot maybe 30 missiles out from you. Whereas if you're surrounded by like a million missiles and you're about to blow up and it's like almost the end of the world, then you hit the missile button. Oh, son, that's when Armageddon comes out of you and kills everything. So it's like we were talking about earlier, it's the same kind of risk reward. I mean, I like it, but I can totally see how like it's super complicated. And if you've not played the original, it's not even remotely friendly to new players.
Yeah, like I didn't make the jump and buy the full game. I just played a couple levels of the demo. I'm not totally sold.
Well, even then, I fucking bought it the exact. I didn't even play the demo. I said purchase, and I like it a lot. But I mean, even me, I'm a pretty hardcore. I beat the original Bangaio. It's 45 levels of rape. This one has 100, and it's like not even happening.
It's terror on Rape Mountain.
But
so yeah, I haven't bought it because it seemed like the trick was to just build up your little meter and then do your special and then build it up, do the special, and it was just like this sequence of just doing that over and over and over again. It didn't really seem like,
well, you know, if you can get those specials, you'll do so much damage with the specials that you don't have to. They'll fill themselves up, right?
Yeah, because it seems like as you shoot stuff or you collect all this fruit and shit and you can do it again and you know.
Yeah, I would say, if you've never played before, watch some YouTube videos, maybe like some instructions, or maybe if you have the ability, play the original one first, because yeah, it's. It's rough.
So I haven't given up on it, but I also haven't bought it. So right. I'm kind of in the
middle. At this point,
you've
basically given up. Come on, there's too many tapes to play. Just a thing.
Yeah, there is that. I mean, it made me go back to Robotron though. I've been playing a lot of that.
Oh man,
like,
I played Robotron California Extreme this week, and I was thinking, man. Justific would smoke me into the ground on this game because, it's just so hard. You can't even get through. You can't even get through like. Four screens of Robotron until you're dead.
It's another game where if you don't get the fuck out of where you are in 2 seconds, you're fucked. But I don't know. I think the difference between Robotron and Bangaio is in Robotron, I know exactly what I have to, because like it gives you that moment as your guy warps in and everything else warps in. It's like, okay, well, here's probably where, you know, it's here's the least concentration of dudes, and I can shoot through them and sort of, you can sort of formulate a plan. Bangaio seems to be just, okay, I'm just going to spam the fucking special button until shit goes away.
And especially with these, like, old school games, you know, that made me think of another thing. I was at California Extreme watching this guy who is a high-level Food Fight player. Do you know what Food Fight is?
I've played it, yeah.
But I was watching, he was showing these videos off of like high level Food Fight play, and it's ridiculous because it's kind of like just Robotron. You're just in the level, everything is running at you at max speed. In 1 second, you will either beat the level or you will die. Those are the only options.
You know, like watching like a really high level Robotron player, of which I am not, I'll admit that. I mean, I'm actually okay at it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not that good, but watching a really good Robotron player is fucking mesmerizing.
Yeah. Anyway, let's see. Oh, do you want to add on to this, or do you want to go to my tape for this week?
Go to your tape, and then I got two more that I played that I can probably do really quick, too.
All right. My tape for this week is called WarioWare DIY. Now, since I was on vacation, I saw this game for $15. I thought, I love the original WarioWare. Let's give it a go. So let me just go ahead and say, so far, I love and hate this game. Because I love it in the sense that they make you, essentially it's like WarioWare, you know, where you play these 3 second games to back, but you have to design almost all the levels. Which, in a sense, is really
how
cool.
How so?
It's really cool because you are literally, like, you draw the sprites, you can script them with AI, you can tell, you tell, like, what the win conditions are. In that sense, it's very deep. There's a lot, I mean, basically every single because there's a bunch of pre-made games in it, too. Every single one of them, you could have made on your DS with what they give you in the game. You see what I'm saying?
Interesting.
So you, like, the super advanced ones that have, you know, lots of animation and lots of stuff going on, you could still make those. And in fact, you can click edit and see exactly how they're made. And there's,
oh, sweet.
There's even this very deep, like, it's called they call it like the AI dungeon. And you go down there and it's got all these, I mean, like 100 tutorials helping you how to, like, design stuff.
Okay.
The thing I don't like about it is you have to design all the levels. I mean, there's
okay.
It's like it's sort of like you're working for Wario, and he's like, "Draw me a sprite for this level," and then you draw the sprite, and then you can play that game. And after you make 15 games, you can play them in the sort of standard WarioWare sense. But on another level, it's like, man, the main mechanic of this game is is not work. Is not playing it. It is work. Which, I mean, supposedly I didn't have internet, but I guess there's an online mode and you could go on and download other players' levels and maybe there's, you know, you mm-hmm. could, I mean, it's, the potential is cool, but at the same time, it's, you know, it's not, it's def, I mean, the tutorial alone, and it, I only got through the main tutorials, there's even all these advanced ones, but tutorials take about two, 3 hours to get through.
Good lord.
Yeah, there's a, because it's, you know, it's war, because they've designed this game for kids, even though it's really, really not for kids.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, like, the thing is, like, WarioWare is all about being able to pick it up and play it right away with this microgame where you know exactly what to do.
Right, but...
And it's, yeah, it's, yeah, it seems kind of really counterintuitive to, you know, like, I'll admit, like, it's a very cool idea. Like, this sounds interesting.
Right, no, it's a
but,
super...
But, you know, it's like, WarioWare to me is all about, you know, it's like, in 3 seconds, I know I have to hit the A button to pick the nose and not... stick my finger in my eye.
That's another thing, like, that they like, oh, pick the noses in there and they'll show you how to make pick the nose. But right, like there's exactly, it's not super quick and easy to get into, and they have these sort of, there's 90 pre-made games in it, but mm-hmm. I played for a few hours and got all the high scores. I couldn't unlock any more of the pre-made games, I think, until I did some of the make-your-own games. I think they're kind of hiding, like, make, you know, sprites. They're like challenges. It's like, do these 15 challenges, then you can play a DIY, your own DIY game level. And then, I guess, maybe you get the second tier of the pre-made levels, and they're a little more advanced, and they give you more advanced tutorials. But, yeah, it sort of balances its fun with not fun.
Yeah, I'm not...
So I don't know. I'll play a little more. I'll play a little more.
Yeah, play a little more.
But certainly for $15, you know, fucking driving to Vegas, man. That's all I did. Good God. Yeah. Hey, you know what's on the way to Vegas if you're driving out there from San Jose? Fucking nothing.
Nothing.
Dirt in every direction.
Lots of dirt. No, like I've made the drive back and forth between Vegas, because I had family in Vegas while I went to school at in L.A. So I made that drive like every couple of months.
Oh my God, no thank
it's,
you.
It's just like you better have some fucking loud music and just rock that shit out, because it's boring as hell.
Yeah, even Mississippi, across the river every now and then. There's some there's some trees. Yeah. It's not dirt for miles in every direction. Anyway, so just Vic, what's your last or your last few tapes for us?
Yeah, I got a couple more quickies. Another one that was on my XBLAW demo Roundup Jones. I finally got to play the new Castlevania. Not Lords of Shadow. This is Castlevania. Oh, I think it's called Harmony of Dissonance.
Harmony, get it? HD. Harmony HD. Of Dissonance.
Castlevania HD.
Clever what they did there.
Yeah, it sucks.
Really?
Oh my God, I can't fucking stand this game.
Really?
It seems like, well, the thing is, like, I got it and I wanted to like it so much. I mean, I fucking love 2D Castlevania games, and having, you know, and the thing is, like, they all use, like, the same type of sprites and the same mechanics, so I was like, it would be so cool if you could have all these Castlevania characters in the same game, and somehow they managed to fuck it up. Somehow they managed to fuck that game up.
Now,
like, I don't know. I mean, like, you.
What,
like,
sucks about it?
The biggest sin in my mind is fucking up the controls.
Really?
Yeah. That's always been the most important thing.
Now,
to me.
I've played this game a good bit. I didn't notice any problems with the controls.
Well, with the demo anyway, it starts you off with Alucard, and that's the only character you get.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I'll be honest, I had just come off of playing, I played Symphony of the Night for a little bit, because I'm playing games like that to, you know, to do some, you know, some research for Kung Fu Kill Force.
Sure. And it's not time wasting, it's research.
Yeah, exactly.
Not
so I was like, okay, well, I'll get this new Castlevania, but, like, just straight up the movement speed of Alucard in Castlevania HD is like absolutely frustratingly sluggish.
It's not the same as it is in Symphony of the
Night.
No,
he's He maybe moves like half as fast.
Really? I didn't notice that.
It's annoying as shit. Like, I don't know if maybe the other characters run quicker. But God, it's frustrating to do anything because the movement speed is so fucked. And, you know, that really took the wind out of the game right away. And then I did like how a lot of the enemies are kind of balanced. You know, like, because the game is meant to throw this whole huge level at you. So there's really no progression, there's no exploration, it's just, the level's kind of like an obstacle course.
Right.
You know, and I do kind of like how, you know, I have not played multiplayer, and it seems like that would be kind of fun if, you know, they had a character that didn't control, like, dog shit. But yeah, man, it's just like...
Well...
It's like the exploration is gone, which is a huge part of the Castlevania franchise now. The fun movement and combat and platforming is gone because the movement speed sucks balls.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, what's left?
Well, now, Justin, now, I played this game a pretty good bit, and I agree with some of your points, but at the same time, I can see why some of these design decisions were made. Now, I didn't notice the control elements. Maybe they're a little slow. I didn't really notice that, but you're certainly... more of a hardcore Castlevania player than I am, but
I can totally see why they were made because there's a lot more platforming that has to be balanced, and you know, like a lot of the platforming elements are meant for two or more
people. I think the main thing here they really fucked up when they named this game. They should call it this like Castlevania Online. Because that's what this game really is. From the ground up, it's designed for multiplayer. It's really best when you play it with six people. And of course, though the PS3 version is coming out soon, that'll have couch co-op. You can only do it over Xbox Live. On the Xbox version. So if you have eight players, you see what I'm saying? Though, like, you couldn't have exploration, right? Because you all have to play these set maps. It's almost like if you were to take Castlevania and try and make it work as online Call of Duty is sort of how they've oriented it, because you couldn't have levels. You couldn't have like, oh, I'm a level 8 a la carte, because then you're playing with some other schmo who's never played the game before and you would just like totally outpace him, which still kind of happens, but the way they try to combat that is by using item-based skill progression. And so based on your items is sort of what level you are. I'm using air quotes here. You can't hear
me.
But you see, it's like,
so yeah, I mean, yeah, like maybe if I had a huge group of people, you know. But the thing is, I mean, the controls still kill it for me.
Okay.
I mean, and there are some things in there that I do like. You know, for instance, in the one demo level you get, there's the I think the Morgoth creature that, you know, like its face pulls back and it shoots that big fucking laser out of his mouth. Like that actually goes across the whole map. So it, you know.
And let me also add, they've added a ton of maps. Since this game was originally released, I think they've probably doubled the number of levels that are in it with DLC.
Okay.
So, I mean, there's if you're into this game, there is a, like, you can keep playing it for a long time, because I think the original only has six levels in it, something like that.
Okay. So, I mean, yeah, like, there are some cool things to it. I mean, honestly, all they need to do for me is update the game and increase his movement speed. That's all I need.
I think your hang-up, Justin Fick, is, see, same as me. It's like, I think you were thinking this was going to be like Symphony of the Night 2. Had they called it Castlevania Online, I think you wouldn't have such... You wouldn't be so disappointed.
I do agree with that. But I mean, you know, I think just if the game was exactly the same, but they just increased the speed at which this guy moves, like I would enjoy it, and I probably would have bought it. I mean, it's one of those things, you know, like you hear Miyamoto talk about how he, you know, designed Super Mario Brothers, and it's like for the longest time, all they had was, you know, a Mario that just moved back and forth and can jump. That's it. And they made sure that was as fun as possible before they moved on and put anything else in the game. It seems like these guys just glossed over that. It's like, it's not fun to move.
It really is important. These sound like, I mean, it sounds like simple things. I can't even talk. I hate to keep bringing this up, but I was at California Extreme, I was watching Crystal Castles. And whenever I played Crystal Castles on the Xbox, I never fucking got it. It was hard as shit to move because your dude runs around and it's really awkward. And I was like, why do people love this game so much? This game is a piece of shit. And then I played it on the arcade and it has a trackball. And suddenly the controls, which were complete ass on the Xbox, now made sense.
Make a lot of sense, right. Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, I can very slowly roll the ball and just like go out just a step. Whereas on the Xbox, it's like full clip all the time. Nothing in the middle. And, like, yeah, that's a super, super important part. Or, like, for instance, I got the highest score I've ever gotten in Millipede while I was at California Extreme. Millipede's a hard fucking game, but I never played it with the trackball until I played it out of California Extreme. 108,000.
Nice.
It's all right. Thank you very much. Please hold your applause.
Well, I mean, that's kind of what I like about all, you know, like, all those old arcade games is... Every one of them had a control scheme that was made specifically for that game.
Mm.
And it wasn't like they were trying to graft a game onto, you know, say, like, if you want to release a Nintendo game, you have a D-pad and two buttons, start and select, that's it.
Yeah, that's where that's where your design starts, not where where you adapt it
pretty
to.
Pretty much. Yeah, and, you know, like, look at, you know, you look at Robotron, it's like, Robotron's like, fuck you, I want two joysticks.
Mm-hmm.
And they create a game that was never, you know, like you, it's very unique.
Very true. So, anything? Let's see. Did you have any more tapes for us, or anything else you want to add to that?
I got one more little tape.
Who we got?
And this is one that I like. This is one that not what I'm shitting on. This one is called Jamestown. Legend of the Lost Colony.
This sounds like dog shit, Justin Fick. What is this?
Okay, this is a... So it's based on the British colony. You know, Jamestown. It's got all that, you know, John Smith bullshit.
Okay.
But it's a bullet hell shooter set on Mars. And it's done really well.
Dude, this looks fucking amazing. Oh my God.
Doesn't it? Dude, so it's kind of a retelling of, this, you know, the colony of Jamestown. But... It's, you know, we're colonizing Mars, and, you know, it's under attack. So, I've played a little bit of it.
Now, is this an indie game? What?
This is an indie game.
Now, what is it on, and when did it come out?
It's on Steam. It's PC only.
Damn it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm ready to boot camp my shit so I can buy this myself. I play it over a friend's place. But, yeah, dude, it's fucking fun as shit. It's a little on the easy side. I didn't play the whole game, but it's, you know, it's not a complete bullet hell. I mean, it's nothing like a cave game or anything like that, or like Ikaruga. So the big mechanic is this, what the hell is it called? I think it's called vaunting. So you have to build up your vaunt meter. So when you blow shit up, you collect these little golden bolts and nuts and shit. And they fill up your vaunt meter, and when you vaunt, you basically wipe out bullets in this radius, and you do double damage, and I think, like, your score doubles for a little bit of time, too. So it's, you know, and it's really cool, and while you're doing that, you can blow more shit up and collect more golden shit, and keep your vaunt bar from running out. But it's just a lot of fun. It's done really well. If you're into it, it's got a whole story behind it too about the colony on Mars, and you know it very much parallels the story of, you know, Jamestown.
This looks amazing.
Yeah, it's got huge. It's got really cool production value, really cool art style, cool music. I like everything about the game, and I wish it was on the Mac so bad.
Add to cart. It's too late. I'm already buying it. Just fixing it. I have this. I should not be allowed to get on Steam while we're on the show. This is not helping me. But yeah, man, I know. I went to this talk on bullet hell shooters this weekend too. Uh-huh. And like, have you heard of what's the one? Oh man, I hadn't played it in ages. But this game reminds me a lot of it. It was on like Saturn. You should know the name of this. It's the one where you can swing your sword and like absorb bullets. You know what I'm talking about?
Jeez. The thing is, I was never really a Saturn player. Is it Radiant Silver Gun,
yes,
though?
Yes, that's okay. It. This reminds me a lot of that. So, dude, thumbs up on this. I hadn't even played it. Love it.
Yeah, it's a fun-ass game.
I want to talk to the dudes that made this game. Now we're going to got to get me an interview going on now, Justin Fig.
Yeah, I'd love to talk to these guys.
We'll find them. We'll see. I will send an email. You're welcome, listeners. Doing work. You're welcome. all right, well, I guess it's time for feedback. Just Vic, we got one voicemail this week. I'm going to play it for you right now.
All right.
Hey, guys, it's KG. I just want to comment on the Duke Nukem topic you guys had. You were wondering why it was selling so much. And I think it was because it had it had 12 years of pre-sale time. So, within those 12 years, I'm sure they got that they got a handful of orders from that. All right, talk to you later. Bye.
Yeah, I guess that's certainly part of it.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see how much of that was a pre-sale and how many of these people who pre-ordered this game fucking 13 years ago. Yeah. They had Duke Nukem show up. It's like, what the fuck?
Yeah, they forgot.
It's like, oh yeah, I pre-ordered this 13 years ago. I pre-ordered this when I was 5.
Yeah, even like the voicemail, they got like, your game is in stock. It's from 1994 or whatever. Yeah. Radical, man. Check out GameStop or Electronics Boutique or whatever it was called back in the day.
The thing is, I mean, I hate to make Duke Nukem Took Forever jokes, but people probably pre-ordered that game from businesses that have since gone out of business.
Right.
Like, I pre-ordered this game from KB Toys fucking 12 years ago.
All right, Justin, we got one email. You want to take this? This is also from... I sent you this email earlier, so I don't know how much of this you want to read or not.
All right, I'll read this. So, this is... As some of you may know, Justin Fick is working on a UDev Games entry. It's called Kung Fu Kill Force. And it's...
Kung Fu Kill Force Battle on Rape Mountain. All right, Justin Fick?
Kung Fu Kill Force 2 Super Bukkake Ball. So, not too long ago, I got an email from Zap Brannigan, who it was our former album art putter inner.
I forgot, dude. That. We used to do that. Man, how dumb.
Who, we used to have album. Who we used to put work into this shit. All right, so Zap Brannigan, a.k.a. Eric Skov, writes in, hey, Miller and or BDPE crew. This is Zap Brannigan, a former album art putter in fame. Just listening to the podcast and heard Vic has gone Freebird. And I was wondering if he'd be interested in my services for some game art. If you could forward him my message along my website. So he got in touch with me, and I've been emailing him back and forth, and he's been making some cool fucking some pixel art for Kung Fu Kill Force. So he made me a little Bruce Lee guy, and doing some enemy concepts, and he's actually really good at what he does. He's
one of our listeners has talent. Justin Fick, get out,
dude.
You're lying.
So yeah, like. Check out his website. He's got a couple flash animations that made me laugh out loud a few times. Like he's they've got like good comedic timing and the art is good. It's got a lot of, it's got style and personality to it.
So what's his site again?
EricSkov.com.
ErikSkov.
Yep.
Awesome. All right. Well, I guess that does it for this week of the best damn podcast ever, Justin Fick. What do you think about that?
That was a damn good show for it being a little mini show. Still ended up being an hour and 20 minutes. Yeah,
we said before we started, let's do a 45 minute show. No.
Yeah, so much for that.
I meant to mention this at the beginning of the show. William Miller is going to be, I guess, maybe available, maybe not available for the next month. He's in crunch on his game, Bone Quest. That's what I'm calling it now.
No. Dude, that's an awesome name, fucking Bone Quest.
What is it? No,
I'm writing that down in the ass book. Dude, Blake, look, I'll make you a game called Bone Quest.
Super Bukkake Bone Quest. That actually makes a lot of sense. But Reckoning. I'm sorry, I keep forgetting this.
Reckoning
is in like crunch, so he may or may not be available for the next monthish of the shit show. We'll see. He said he could come on some, so I don't know. It could just be you and me holding down the fork for the next week or two, just a big.
Also, William Miller, finish your shit up. We miss you.
I know. What is this? If you like sending any feedback, it's feedback at bestdamnpodcastever.com. Or you can call the listener line 845-BATTLE-9. Thanks to Craig Reed for editing these shows together. And who else we got? Pseudo Sushi and TK. Hadn't heard from TK in a while. Usually we get hateful TK emails about once a week. And
We should send TK like a bottle of something. Be like, drink this and call us. We miss you, TK.
Nice. So I guess that's it from all of us here at the Best Damn Podcast Ever. I'm Blake Buck.
I'm Justin.
And we'll see you next time.
Boom.